Hi, this is Lou Ann Bird, and you're listening to Bird on a Wire, where we are having conversations about hope, civility, and action. Thank you for listening on the Civic Media Network. Thank you all so much for coming. I'm Lou Ann Bird, your host, along with Civic Media, for Bird on a Wire podcasts, where we're holding conversations with people about civility, hope, and action. And I couldn't think of a better group that influenced my life and to really highlight to our listeners than the League of Women Voters of Milwaukee County. So welcome. I have with me Peggy Creer, past president, and a few other leaguers in the audience and friends, so we can jump right in and get started. So welcome, Peggy. I'll just do a brief introduction. I learned about the League probably 30 years ago when I saw they used to write little op-eds in the little editorials in the newspaper. And I'm like, that looks like a good group. So that's how I first learned that there is a League of Women Voters. And then my husband was paralyzed in 1990, right before the ADA laws were signed. And so when he got out of the hospital, everything was not wheelchair accessible. And the schools were our first challenge, right? I've told that story many times, so I won't tell it again. But here's what happened. For 2 years, I was miserable. I couldn't figure out how to make things work. And then I went to a League of Women Voters meeting after 2 years of struggling. And I was telling him what my problem was. I had done a little assessment of all the schools in Oshkosh, and there were like four of them a wheelchair couldn't even get into, and one of them was a polling place, you know. And the uh-huh. League of Women Voters jumped right on that, and one of the leaguers put her hand on her hip and said, "What if a salesman comes to one of those schools? Of course they should be accessible." So I wrote my check that night, and they taught me how to take action and how to work with the school board and how to create a committee and how to show the press what was going on. They taught me so many things that I joined that night, and I've been a member ever since. And I did move a few times around. And when I moved here, I met a bunch of cool leaguers, and Peggy Creer was president, maybe not president.
No, I wasn't president then. I remember our first meeting.
Yeah,
we were working on a candidate forum.
That's right. So tell us about yourself, and then tell us what the League does.
Well, I was thinking on the way here that I've had a long time interest in politics, but I don't know why. I think it stems from a sense of fairness and want everything to be fair and seeing things that aren't fair, as you have noted, too. And I volunteered in partisan politics for a while. And then decided, I got kind of fed up with that for reasons I won't go into, but then I decided it's bigger than that. The things that concern me are kind of higher level stuff about fairness and how votes count and how elections work and that sort of thing. So I decided to look into the League of Women Voters because I remembered them as a kid. I remember the presidential candidate forums that they would run, and they stopped those in the 80s. The League bowed out because of the role of the political parties in creating too many rules and taking over the rules of candidate forums. Those forums or debates would be a lot better now if the League of Women Voters were still running them, in my opinion. But the letter that the president of the National League of Women Voters wrote at that time, saying why the League of Women Voters would not participate anymore in these under these conditions, is pretty cool. And we've run it in our newsletter before. I should resurrect it. You can Google it. But she said that the League will not participate in this charade, and that they're hoodwinking the voters because of their rules. And so I thought this is a cool group of women. So I decided to look into nonpartisan activism, and I really like the League and the people in it.
So you've been a member for how long then?
13 years.
Okay. Always in Milwaukee County here?
Always, yeah.
Okay. So then, yeah. tell us more about what the league does. I know that I personally have done a lot of cool things, some of my favorites, but I'll let you lay it on. I know the mission. What's the mission?
The mission is to empower voters and defend democracy. And our work, it's all volunteers, over 400 of them. And we're divided into basically two objectives. One is all about voting and elections, getting nonpartisan, unbiased information out to the public so that they know how to register to vote, how to vote, how to find information on it, all of that kind of stuff, where your polling place is, all of that sort of thing. That includes doing candidate forums as well. And the other side of it is issue advocacy, which a lot of people don't know that the League does that. But the League has quite a detailed process of researching government policy issues from all different angles, and then building a consensus, and if the membership votes to adopt a position, so be it. And so we advocate in the public interest on a lot of public policy issues. And that includes things like having safe drinking water, a lot of environmental causes that our league is very involved in. And then on the political side, things like redistricting reform, voter rights, that sort of thing.
If you want to get involved and take action, the league is a great place. And like you said, it has a variety of different activities that you can do. I know that when I first joined the league, it was about handicap access and disability rights. And the first thing the league did, you bring what you care about to the league in a way. If you care about democracy, this is the place to go. So I joined, and then I worked with, the league did things with me about, we did a panel on disability rights to inform the public, and then they taught me how to go to a school board meeting and make presentations. So I think you can bring what you want to the league. But then over the years, like you said, I ended up registering voters for the league. That's a very big deal, and getting out there. I know you guys go into the high schools and try to register them, right?
Yeah, we're a partner with the Milwaukee Public Schools and with the Milwaukee Election Commission, formed a partnership in 2015 to get into the high schools. It's not easy to get into the high schools. You need to work very closely with MPS, and we actually help the students conduct voter registration drives, because we have found that this might come as a shock to some of you, but when you put in the lunchroom a table of older women, students don't flock over to them in the way you might think. And if students are running the voter registration drives, it's a lot more effective. So we work with the students so that they can do it. And we are also the only organization, and it's been going on for more than 50 years, that is invited to the federal courthouse for naturalization ceremonies. And we register new citizen voters at those. So, you know, our reputation for nonpartisanship is what's so important, and we work very hard to maintain that.
I got to do that when I moved here. They needed volunteers, and that was about 10 years ago. It was, of all the things the league does, that was probably one of my favorites, is being there and watching all of those families and the tears and the process that they went through and the pride they have about becoming Americans. And boy, they really wanted to vote. That was a big deal for them. So I got to make a few little welcome speeches there as well, and then watch the hugs and the tears and the families reunite. It's pretty touching to see that.
Oh, very, very moving. And I mean, if you want an antidote to cynicism over our politics and the state of things, well, the public can't go in to watch those, but I mean, it's really something to see.
Yeah.
Each ceremony is 70-some people, usually representing at least 50 countries, and they come dressed in red, white, and blue. They're carrying their little flags sometimes. We help take pictures of them. You know, there's a great big flag that hangs in the atrium of the federal courthouse, and that's where our table is, and they want to pose there by the flag to get their picture taken. It's really inspiring.
So we were very instrumental. One thing in registering voters, registering these new citizens, originally it was easy to do. And then the laws started to change. So you could get training to be
special registration deputy. Are you talking about that?
Yeah, a deputy. And then once you were trained, you could register voters anywhere.
And then they made it harder by making you have to only, wait, how did that go? They made you have to register and be trained in the community in which you were registering voters. Yeah. Why did they do that?
So for us, because the league is a Milwaukee County league, so we've got members from all over, including pretty many members from Waukesha County, but you had to go to each municipality to get like certified to registered voters. And so when we went to those naturalization ceremonies, I mean, this is going back 2010 or something. When you'd go there, you'd have to say, where are you from? Is anybody here certified in Franklin? You know, that sort of thing. So,
and there was no good reason for that, that we...
No, I don't know a good reason.
Don't know a good reason to do that. But it's changed since then. What's happened?
Yeah, well, now we have... There is no such thing as a special registration deputy, although there is another designation for, like, the people who go into nursing homes to help register people. But now the state has a statewide voter registration website, which has made things a lot easier. And now when we go to registration events, we rarely use paper forms. It's instructing people on their iPhones or whatever, on their cell phones or on a tablet that we have, on how to go to the website, myvote.wi.gov, and register themselves or check their registration.
So over the years, it's been my observation and experience that they're making it harder to vote rather than easier to vote. I also remember a time when, in order to vote, the league puts out the rules, right? They were changing like every other week. Yeah. So you'd get your brochures printed and all of a sudden a new rule came in.
Yeah.
Do you remember those times?
Oh yeah.
So
yeah.
You were president through some of that. How did you navigate that?
Well, we got away from using paper was part of it because it was just too hard. They would go through and put little, cut up white labels to put over and write in what the new thing was. So now, like the rest of the world, it's mostly online or digital kinds of access to all these rules. But yeah, beginning in 2010, the rules changed. And what we observed, which was gratifying, was our membership like tripled. And it was people being offended by barriers to the ballot that were being erected for, as you say, no good reason. There wasn't an issue with fraud that anybody could ever prove. There's lots of evidence that that's just not true. But they made it harder to vote, and especially for students. And young people have always had the lowest voter turnout rates forever. And part of that might be, you know, maybe you're not as engaged in where my taxes go or something when you're young. But I'm not willing to say it's apathy. I really don't think so, especially nowadays. Exciting news on that front. But they make it especially hard for students to vote. The rules are very complicated, and young people move more often than other people, and you have to register every time you move. So I think that right there is a big reason why turnout is lower among young people. It's just kind of a hassle when you think we could do something like automatic voter registration and then wouldn't have to deal with this sort of thing. But the rules around acceptable identification for voting for students are ridiculous. You have to have a photo ID, and you can't just use your college ID. In some cases you can, but a lot of them you couldn't. You had to go get a special ID from the university to make it valid, because suddenly it had to have not just your photo on it, but it had to have your signature. And why would that ever be necessary? But that was one of the rules. And it had to have an expiration date on it that could not exceed 2 years from the date of issuance. Why would, does that make sense in a four-year college? You know, and if the ID didn't meet all of the requirements, then you had to bring, still do have to bring proof that you are enrolled. You have to bring your tuition receipt or something. And that can't be older than, I think, 9 months. So anyway, it's very complicated for students.
And so they also put in the rule, is that still in place with the 28 days? If you move,
yeah,
you can't, within 28 days, you can't vote if you move in 28 days before an election. You just
you'd have to figure out how to vote from your previous address.
You can, even though you don't live there.
Yes.
So if you moved across state lines, you still can't vote here.
Right. You'd have to vote from your previous address.
Why did they change that? Do you know?
I'll leave it to you to speculate.
Nobody knows. Okay.
I mean, there wasn't an objective reason you could point to.
Yeah.
I'll leave it at that. The rule used to be 10 days, and that's gone kind of back and forth over the years with court rulings.
Uh-huh. Okay. So what else has changed over the years that you have seen? I mean, I've seen them make it more difficult. We had drop boxes during the pandemic, and that seemed to bring out a lot more voters. And then that's going to go back through the courts, I understand.
Okay. Yeah. Well, the other thing that's changed is the district maps, voting district maps.
Yeah, talk about that.
And that's in the news a lot nowadays. It was a big issue in the spring election for Supreme Court Justice because this would be a chance to bring our maps against before the Wisconsin Supreme Court again. And I want to make clear that the League of Women Voters considers the issue of voting district maps to be completely nonpartisan. And we adopted a position favoring an independent commission and very transparent process for drawing voting district maps, as is required after every census, every 10-year census. And we adopted that position when, in the 70s, when the Democrats drew maps to their advantage. Now we're dealing with maps that have been drawn to Republicans' advantage. So it's not a partisan issue as far as the League is concerned. And in fact, the issue of redistricting reform has come up in referenda in something like 2/3 of the counties of Wisconsin, including very red and very blue counties, and they have all passed with overwhelming majorities. Voters don't like this sense of unfairness of rigged maps. And I can say that because it's a fact. It's not my opinion. A federal judge has asserted it. Lots of computer scientists and mathematicians can demonstrate how the maps are rigged. And some local statistics in 2018 for the state assembly election, the votes were 54% blue, 46% red, but the seats awarded then were 36% blue, 63% red. So things are out of whack when it's that far off. Of course, it's not going to be even Steven all the way through.
Right.
But when it's that far off, maps are not representing the votes.
So I wanted to point out the process. You did that pretty well. What does the League do about these things? So you said we take a position. How does that happen?
Well,
if I join the League, how do I get involved in that? And I care about maps.
Well, the good thing is it's a tedious process.
Hi, this is Lou Ann Bird, and you're listening to Bird on a Wire, where we are having conversations about hope, civility, and action. Thank you for listening on the Civic Media Network.
Oh, you guys are amazing. This is really fun. Okay. Are we ready? Okay, so when you mentioned lobbying, there is a committee at the state level, and they represent these different issues, correct? There's a chair of the gun legislation committee. There's a chair of environmental, isn't it? Education, strong advocates for public education, we are. Positions like women's rights. And they're down there, and they are testifying at hearings at the state level. And we are making phone calls here because Leaguers know who their representatives are. Am I right? You all know, and have most of them have relationships with them, because that is where the power lies, in letting them know. So I just wanted to highlight that, because it is a very active group.
Yes.
Not just in voting rights and not just in registering voting, but in lobbying for the issues that we care about, the fairness. I'm going to keep going back to that.
Well, and I'll
fairness
go back
and
to
democracy.
The fairness of the maps. It does more than just give an unfair, unearned advantage to the party that drew the maps in their favor. It depresses voter turnout. because people who live in uncompetitive districts don't have much of an incentive to vote. If you're happy with your elected representative, your vote isn't needed. If you're not happy with your elected representative and would like to support an opponent, you have good reason to think your vote doesn't really count because it's not going to change anything. The fix is in, you know, the seat is safe. So it depresses voter turnout, and that has sort of a domino effect. That means that the people who come out to vote in a primary election tend to be the most fervent party supporters. And that gives an incentive to candidates to appeal to the extremes of the parties. And then once they're elected, that results in less incentive to work across the aisle or to compromise. And we all end up with more extreme legislation as a result of that. And we see that.
That's where the maps become so important. Yeah. I know I ran for the assembly last year. Full disclosure, probably most of you know that. And I ran in a district where I really felt the impact of those gerrymandered maps, because you would have a neighborhood and it was just clearly cut out to bring a certain group in to this district. And there were like four different municipalities that touched the 84th Assembly, maybe three. Okay. But it makes no sense when you're trying to govern for the whole, you know, to have a slice of Milwaukee, you know, all of Hales Corners, a slice of Greenfield, and a slice of Greendale. They just chopped all these communities up. So if I'm on the village board in Greendale, I probably have two or three, and it's a small community, representatives that I have to reach out to have that conversation about what local municipalities need or what local school board members need. You know, it makes it so much more complicated to work together to accomplish anything. It really does.
And there's a lawsuit over that now that points to how some of the districts, it's like they didn't follow the rules. One of the rules is, to the extent possible, well, they have to be contiguous. And there are districts where you have to cross, you know, you got to skip over a municipality to get to the rest of your district, in another municipality.
Yep.
So it's hard to group together to represent in common interests of a community when your community is split up like that, as you say.
So when I knocked on doors, it was really fun to run and say, in this district, it was purple. It could have gone either way. So that meant, you know, good news for you at the door. I'm here. I'm just letting you know who I am. I'm letting you know that we can flip this seat, and, you know, your vote matters. Your vote counts. And it does encourage more voting, because a lot of people are disenfranchised. And one of the reasons I like doing these podcasts is when you talk about the kind of action that you can take, if you're sitting there and you're unhappy about something in your life, whatever it is, if you don't like your local school board right now, or if you're unhappy with, you know, the state of women's health care, or you don't like what they're doing in Medicare. I just picked up a new issue over the weekend, and this is what leaguers probably do, right? My husband's at the VA. He was in the hospital. There's another guy there who has ALS. And little shout out to Garrett Smith, who's been in there for 2 years because he's on a vent and there isn't a care facility that can take him. Now, you're talking, Garrett, you just met a League of Women Voter. And, you know, I'm not going to walk away from that. I'll make some phone calls to Tammy Baldwin's office. And, you know, this is what we can do. And so if you're listening to this, that's the hope we're trying to portray in these podcasts, is figuring out where you can plug in. And leaguers became more important to me in the last, you know, couple of years, because I felt that voter suppression was happening. And when they started going after disability rights, saying that I couldn't mail my husband's ballot if he wasn't feeling good that day, I really took issue to that. And it shouldn't have taken a lawsuit to get them to throw that out, right?
Right. This is common sense stuff.
This is common sense stuff.
Make it easy to return a ballot.
Yeah.
Make it easy to register.
So what good things have you seen change since you've been a member of the League?
Well, really great news was the autumn, the November 2022 election, and Wisconsin had the highest turnout in the nation among 18 to 24 year olds. And that was more than double the national average. So that was huge. We're a high turnout state anyway. We're always in the top five. But that turnout, 49% among 18 to 24 year olds, again, a group that traditionally has lower turnout, that was amazing. And that gives me great optimism heading into 2024. and hoping that more people vote in these the primary elections. They're so important, and the turnout is terrible. I mean, generally, more than 3/4 of the people who could vote don't vote in a primary election, especially this spring primary. Hugely important.
Here's another thing I'm hearing. Speaking of young people getting involved, there's a group called Motherhood for Good that has formed in my area. And I was talking with one of the activists from that group, and she said, Lou, it's so scary for us moms this year, because, and it's getting scarier every year because we're going to send our kids back to school and we're not sure they're safe. And I think that's driving a lot of young people right now
Absolutely.
To get involved, don't you?
Yeah, they have a very different lived experience. I work with high schoolers in another way, and I've told them a lot of, you know, like your grandparents' generation don't realize what you went through. We had drills for tornadoes once in a while, a couple times in grade school, and we had the fire drills that nobody panicked about. But, you know, they've been telling me how the active shooting drills have changed over the years, from the time when they were kindergartenish, where it was all about hiding, and then growing to a more find a stapler, find a heavy book, find anything you could use as a weapon. And then we wonder why kids have anxiety.
Right, right.
And they see, I mean, from what I read, they see some pretty obvious common sense actions that could be taken. And they're not seeing it happen. And so I think that's certainly driving voter turnout among young people.
I think so, too.
And running for office.
And running for office. So if you have, that's another thing the League has done over the years is candidate training. We used to, we've done that at the state convention. I know they used to have trainings once in a while. And they can definitely coach you into taking action on whatever issue it is you care about. That aligns, again, with our positions that we take in the League.
But we also have, on our website, lwvmilwaukee.org, we have, for members, an advocacy toolkit that's for our members, how to advocate for League positions. But then we created a citizen advocacy toolkit, so have at it, you know, with your own views. But it tells you the steps and how to build a coalition and effective ways to contact elected representatives to talk about your own issues.
Can you give us a couple of those? Let's just give our listeners a little sneak preview here. What are some of those tips you would give them?
Okay,
in effective advocacy.
All right. One thing is working in a coalition with an organization, if you can, strengthen numbers. With a coalition can be even better. There's some caveats with that. If you're an organization looking to join a coalition, things you should check out to be sure, you know, how your own logo would be used, who's controlling things, what is the reputation of the organizations you're partnering with. I mean, just some things that you should think about. But also, the ineffectiveness of online petitions, which I'm sure all of us are bombarded with. I wouldn't bother with that. And different kinds of action you could take, and paying attention to the people who you would be working with. Some groups, you could get them to do phone banking, but you're not going to get them to pull tires out of a river. Other people will not do phone banking, but they want to be outside cleaning up. You know, so paying attention to who you're working with, their goals, and what they're willing to do. Are they willing to go to the Capitol in March and January, or are you wasting your time? You know,
I have recently discovered another thing about myself, which isn't that what we do as we grow older. I can sometimes push people past their limits. For example, I got more people to knock on doors in my election than ever did. They had never done that before, you know, and I think sometimes we have to ask ourselves that. Do we need a push past our limits? Are you doing all that you can do? And what I want to kind of end this part with is, what captures legislators' attention? How do you get your legislators' attention that this is important and it needs to change?
Personal contact is always good, rather than a form letter, or, you know, certainly not a petition kind of thing. But also, I think it's important to remember that a lot of people, especially with the voting districts in Wisconsin, feel, what's the point? I either I very much agree with my senator, so, or whatever, whoever it is. So, you know, why bother? Or I very much disagree, and it'll, my complaints will fall on deaf ears anyhow. But that's where I think that we need to remind ourselves that the alternative is silence, and that would be worse. It's important for them to know you're paying attention, even if you don't agree with them. And if you do agree with them.
And it's personal. How are you going to feel about yourself if you really haven't made that call? I think the saying that's always kind of driven me, and it makes me mad in a way, because if you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem. And for me, that's all about disability rights, because a lot of people just don't know about them.
Mm-hmm.
Most people don't. So I have to, if I don't speak up, I leave that problem for the next person. So, you know, that's another reason to take action. I do think that's what I tell people too. Get to know your legislator. It's personal. Let them get to know you on a first name basis, because you never know. For example, I think on some of these gun reforms and gun control issues that are not about taking away your Second Amendment rights is gaining momentum. So if you have already contacted your legislator, which is what I had done with Bob Donovan and a trauma surgeon, we met with him about gun control issues. So, you know, and then when I had a personal story to share, I went to him and he, dog laugh, he didn't sign on to that. One of the gun reform laws, the Extreme Risk Protection Act.
Wow.
So it gives you an example of, so sharing stories too. Share your stories, make it personal. And remember, you know, you're talking to a representative who should represent your district. And here's what's happening in your district. Do you know about this? And, you know, they have the power to change things. So we've got to keep on them. That's what I think.
The thing about Luann is she's so good at conducting conversations in a civil and polite way. She's engaging. She's kind. She could talk to people she doesn't agree with. And that's a great thing, because we're certainly losing that.
I'm glad
you may have noticed.
Yeah, I think listening is the way to have more influence on people, is really listening to where are they coming from. Why aren't they voting for this issue? And what's their logic? Obviously, some people you're never going to reach with facts. But that is an extreme few, if you ask me. The majority of people, you know, really will be willing to be open and listen.
And with things so out of whack with, according to the polls, the voters' wishes and the positions of elected officials, maybe if they knew that more voters had their back,
yeah,
they'd feel safer in, you know, bucking a trend or...
Yeah. So the League has been around for how many years now?
103.
103
yeah,
years, and they formed.
1920.
They formed when? And tell us about that. That's an interesting story,
yep,
too, if you don't know.
They formed in 1920. That was the year the 19th Amendment passed, guaranteeing women's voting rights. Of course, it was a long way to go after that to really ensure voting rights. So it's an ongoing issue. But yeah, and that year, or 1921, I think it was, the League advocated for legislation that had to do with funding maternal and infant health care. And, you know, let's pause and think, would that have happened if women hadn't had the right to vote? You know, would that have even been on the table? So, yeah, it was advocacy from the beginning.
Right,
too.
And informing. They wanted their women now could
yeah.
vote. So let's make sure we're informed. Let's make sure we know the issues when we go to the polls. And also then let's make sure the public is informed. So they took all that spirit, activism, care about democracy right out to the people. And it's one of the few groups, well, there's maybe more, but it's very respected to this day. And I'm always proud to say I'm a member of the League of Women Voters. It's just a really good feeling. And I can cite numerous examples where we are reaching our mission of informing the public and of protecting democracy every day. Every day we're out there working
still,
on something.
Still a ways to go as far as female representation among elected officials.
Yes.
So a lot of work
yes.
to do there.
Yes.
And we still don't have an equal rights amendment, although some would contend we do. I was just in a webinar where Russ Feingold said his organization, American Constitution Society, and some others, they say it's done. Enough states have passed it. It should be published. It should be part of the Constitution.
Well,
so
there you have it.
That's a, you know.
Because you can't silence us anymore. We're in the game. We're here. We're part of society. And I go back to your first statement, fairness. Who doesn't want fairness? So with that, let's take a few questions. Does anyone have questions or comments? We have some leaguers here and friends. Okay, Grandma, my friend Grandma Jean.
So if you live in Milwaukee County, do you join at the state level, or and then it takes you to Milwaukee County, or how does that work? Do you have to be 18? And is it women only that are members? Well,
good questions. No, it's not women only. You have to be 16 now. I've got some leaguers in the audience. They're talking about lowering the age even more. We would welcome students. In fact, students are free to join. I mean, there's no dues payment. And when you join at the local level, your local league, you are automatically a member of the state league and the national league. And we didn't mention this earlier, any interleague organization, we call it, that your local league may be a part of. And for us, there's a Lake Michigan region, League of Women Voters, and an Upper Mississippi River region, League of Women Voters, and they do advocacy on water quality issues. And so we're also a part of that. So
I think it's the best value for your dollar if you care about democracy.
I have a 9-year-old granddaughter who's very interested in voting. So,
yes.
Luann knows her, and she has family members who are both parties. And she said, Grandma, how am I going to vote? And I said, you're only 9. She said, but I really want to vote. And I said, yes, it's a privilege to vote. And you can be independent, but you need to learn about the candidates.
So, and I would put plug in for the National League website, vote411.org, that gets updated a few weeks before every election. And there you can go and not just find your polling place and that sort of how to vote kind of information, but completely unbiased information where we ask candidates questions and their answers are printed verbatim. And we also have job descriptions. So if you don't know what a city comptroller does, you know, that sort of thing, you can learn that on vote411.org.
And if you want to hear from your candidates in your community, you can contact the league and they might assist you with organizing a public forum where you can, those are my favorite way to learn about the candidates and get, you know, asking those questions. And I moderated a lot of those over the years.
Yeah.
And they're really fun to do that. So if you're a good moderator, you can do that. But just attending and asking your questions, very powerful, very powerful. Also, I want to mention, attend your local legislators' little open houses or whatever, listening sessions. Make sure you get to those. Okay, other questions or comments about the league? So with that, I think I would like to say thank you to everyone and thank you to the leaguers. I stand on those women's shoulders because when Phil was paralyzed, you know, the impact that I've been able to have as a result of being a member. And I want to also mention I continue to go to activities when I can. And most recently I went to this, was it maybe the annual dinner? Yes. And they did this mock voting of how you can vote different than the way we do it. So I'm always learning something new. I never walk away from a league event without something new going on. So I want to thank you all for that. Thank you, Peggy. Thank you to our listeners. Thank you to Civic Media and to my wonderful producers who are sitting here, Brady and Anya and everybody else who's involved in these kinds of activities. And thanks to our listeners. I hope that you consider joining the league at some point. And looking for resources to get yourself more involved. Thank you, everyone.
We hope you enjoyed listening to Bird on a Wire on Civic Media. For more episodes, visit us at civicmedia.us. I'm Luann Bird. Thanks for listening.
To listen to this and more uninterrupted, listen on the Civic Media app, available on Apple and Android.